Now, it started with players forced to carry bricks 20 kilometres along the sand from Sandringham to Port Melbourne. They then went bush on a bus in a camp run by the Special Operations Group. Now, midfielder Dom Tyson had a sore knee. He participated in the camp. He injured it further. Melbourne telling him tonight he's now got a partial dislocation of that kneecap. They're confident he'll be back around the pre-season competition. I'm also told that Tyson raised some concerns with Simon Goodwin, the coach, although he now sees the benefit in the camp. Tyson wasn't the only casualty. Christian Salem dropped a brick on his head from his backpack. Teammates watched him fall to the ground. He was treated for concussion.
There you go, pre-season training. Everyone's up and about and back in pre-season training. That was about the Melbourne camp just before the Christmas break. A man who knows all about pre-season training, dual premiership coach, North Melbourne team of the century coach, and of course 344 games as a senior coach and 20-plus pre-season. So he knows all about it. Dennis Pagan's on the line. Hello, Dennis. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Kev. How are you?
Good. Happy New Year to you. I hope all went well with the family and had a good Christmas and New Year.
Certainly did. Too much red wine and too much to eat, but on the straight and narrow again now, and looking forward to it.
Terrific. And property prices in the northwest going well there in Pagan Real Estate?
Certainly are. Gee, we've killed them. Well, I think we sold 200 apartments this year. Just an amazing result. And I'm supposed to be on holidays now, but I've been back in work, and all of our sales agents are in there, and they've already started selling again this year. So really pleased.
Oh, good stuff. Dennis, I wanted to talk to you about pre-seasons. And I mean, you had a number of them in your time as a coach and as a player and all that. Everyone's looking for that little edge. Boot camps and the like, that sort of team bonding, I guess. Did you subscribe to that as a theory for pre-season?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think the equilibrium or the unity of a football club is such a fine line. And I think you just got to be careful, because I know the Kangaroos in the 90s, we trained hard. I'm sure the players socialised pretty hard. And we trained hard, and we got some wonderful results, and it created an enormous bond and team spirit. Thought esprit, and our guys were always up for the contest.
It's not something you can measure, is it? It's just something you have to see in the group, and I guess see in their eyes. Did you see that trust and that bond happen between particularly, I mean, 96 and those really successful years?
I was lucky to coach a lot of them when I was under 19 coach for 10 years.
Yep.
And a lot of them came through that. But I just think the way it's all going now, I'm amazed. I think a lot of clubs would spend a fair bit of their time getting players to fill in wellness reports every morning when they come into the club. How did you enjoy your breakfast? Did you sleep well? What was your bowel movement like this morning? all this sort of stuff. You just got to be so careful. The strength and conditioning guys, some of them have taken over the football program, and young, inexperienced coaches have allowed it to happen. And the reality is the strength and conditioning program should be tacked onto the back of the football program. Your ultimate aim as a football team is to win a premiership. You have a look at, just take for example a couple of the games that were played late last year, Bulldogs and GWS up in at the GWS, and the grand final between Sydney and the Bulldogs. Do you think that pussyfooting around and saying workloads were too much and come off the track now you've had five shots for goal, or you don't want to hurt your quad, you think they prepare for games like that? AFL football, when you get to that stage of it, it's war without weapons, whether you like it or not. And if you haven't simulated on the training track what it's likely to happen in these big games or premiership games in the last month of the year, you're not just going to turn it on and say, look, they've looked after us. We've been mollycoddled and looked after, and our loads haven't been too much, and we're fresh and we feel well, and our breakfast was good this morning and I slept well. Do you think that's going to matter much on grand final day or preliminary final day? It's not. It's going to be your preparation and how you've been able to handle the intensity of what it's required over a long period of time.
Yeah.
It becomes second nature to you. And we've changed it all now. And I reckon half the sides now train too cute. And with a result, they're inconsistent with their performance. And I think a lot of coaches have been fooled, and their coaching careers have been whisked away from them because they've fallen into all this strength and conditioning. Now, if you're going to be successful, you've got to have a very good strength and conditioning coach who works closely with the senior coach, and they're on the same page. And I was very lucky to have, you know, two or three really good strength and conditioning coaches, David Butterfant at first at the Kangaroos and Peter Mulkerns, who were just sensational. And I couldn't have been critical, one little bit critical of how our guys were prepared. I always knew, and it was no coincidence, and I think back to the number of times in the 90s when, you know, North Friday night games might have been four goals down 15 minutes into the third quarter and then run away and win by six goals, and you think to yourself, gee, how did that happen?
Yeah.
You get back to your preparation, and sure, a lot of people have criticised me for being a tough love coach, but, you know, if you've got real men playing for you and they've done the work and, you know, they've gone through it together as a group, I reckon you've got a chance of being successful. And I applaud Simon Goodman for the way Melbourne went about their camp.
And you're not talking about caning blokes or punishing blokes or, you know, riding blokes into the dirt. You're actually just talking about preparing them for, you know, to still be as good at the end of the game as they are at the start of the game.
Exactly. Look, if you're going to be successful, and that's one of the toughest gigs going around AFL football, if you're going to be successful, well, tell me how you're going to be successful against the top-end competition unless you've simulated training, what actually happens when the heat is at its greatest. You just can't train cute and say, look, you know, your load's too much or you have some time off. You've got to simulate and you've got to know your players and what they can cope with and what they can't. But at the end of the day, if they can't cope with what's dished up on the training track, how are they going to cope with it, you know, a qualifying final or a preliminary final or elimination final or even a grand final? How are you going to cope in those match of the days, you know, the big games that you see at the MCG, 80,000 in, if you haven't prepared? And I'll say it again, AFL football is a very, very tough game. It's war without weapons. And unless you're prepared that way, you're not going to perform under pressure on a consistent basis.
Dennis, a lot of coaches now, a lot of teams and clubs talk about game simulation. And they go through a lot of game simulation. I mean, in your day and you know, back in the sort of 80s and 90s, it was called match practice. But there doesn't seem to be that edge to the match practice now. Do you see that as where they've lost it or not?
No. I think you can. We used to have mock pressure, game simulation.
Yep.
Mock and a half pressure, full on pressure. You know, we'd have practice games, and you know, even a week before a grand final, I'd say to the boys, bring your mouth guards. Going to be on for Young and I. We haven't picked a side today, and we'll train them mentally as well as physically. And we might have 15 minutes of full on pressure. You got your fingers crossed and your toes crossed that no one gets hurt, and then you revert to mock pressure and you take your good players off, and you can manipulate if you're an experienced coach. But I reckon you've got to be sending a consistent message about, you know, what's required. You know, you've got to be consistent on the training track, and you've got to be able to play at that level week in, week out.
And the thing about, you know, that little grab we heard from Channel 7 News last night with, you know, one of the players dropped a brick on his head and was checked out for a concussion and stuff, that stuff happens. It's just one of the, collateral damage of doing a hard pre-season.
Well, it's a body contact sport. And if one of your players dropped a brick on his head, I don't know how a brick fell out of his knapsack and hit him on the head. I don't know what he was doing. Unusual. But, you know, to hear one of the players go and challenge the coach and say he hurt his knee, after that was unusual to say the least. And look, a lot of people would say, listen to Pagan, he's a silly old fool. He wouldn't know what he was talking about. But they're my thoughts. And if you're going to be successful, and for me, over a 25-year coaching career, it served me well. And, you know, if you don't prepare as you play, how are you going to turn it on? You just don't come in. It's not a light switch. You just don't come in and switch it on. It's something that's, you know, day in, day out. And if you want to be consistent at the top level, that's what you got to do. It was a great article with I read 2 weeks ago with Dean Jones interviewed Gary Sobers.
Yep.
And he was amazed. He's just, you know, fast bowlers breaking down. He was amazed. He just said, look, when we were playing, you should go out and bowl 20 overs in the nets and bat for an hour. and no one was breaking now. Have a look at all the fast bowlers who are breaking down now. They're bowling four overs in the Big Bash, and they said, oh, no, that'll do you. It doesn't work like that, I don't reckon. High-performance people, I believe, not all of them, but some of them have got a lot of things to answer for, I think.
Which is one question I wanted to ask you. It seems to be, from the outside, and that's where I am, the fitness of players, the tiredness of players, their entire performance and well-being is decided by someone else, not by the actual bloke.
Well, that's true too. And look, yeah, we live in a society that let's be realistic. We'll take the easier way out if we can when we're put under pressure. And you know, players will. You know, we got. I watched the game of football, I reckon, last year. A rotation policy, and a guy, I won't say which team it was, kicked the goal in the first 12 seconds of the game and was taken off for a rest or taken off as part of rotation.
Yeah.
Now, if I was playing on somebody and they kicked a goal on me in the first 15 seconds, that'd be the best thing I want to happen. You know, and if someone's kicked a goal, surely their confidence is up and they want to do it again. But anyway.
And if we're talking about the first 12 seconds, 2 minutes of a game, they're not fatigued.
Well, exactly. And, you know, so many of our players are now rotated that many times. They're only, their fitness levels are only there to play 80% of the game. You can measure everything, but you can't measure desire and determination and will and persistence and perseverance and mental toughness. You can't measure that.
Yep.
And, you know, we've got measurements for everything, except the most important things, what's under the rib cage and what's between your ears.
And the other thing, too, is we seem to have become besotted with all those measurements and figures and statistics, and we've taken the actual judgment part out of it, and we're now ruled by those figures, which I think's the difference between, success and non-success.
Well, you're exactly right, but you've got to be careful saying that, Kevin, because people will start saying you're as silly as pagan for talking like that.
I'm quite happy to be as silly as pagan. I wish I had a couple of premierships under my belt and 344 games as a coach and all the credentials that you've got with that. When you look at the modern coaching and modern game plans and those sorts of things, Dennis, do you see big holes in those as well?
Well, I reckon in the AFL at the present, there are two types of coaches. There's good coaches, you know, people who understand, who have got a good product knowledge of the game, you know, good at kick-ins and centre bounces and boundary throw-ins and floods and fold-backs and presses and all that sort of stuff. They understand the game. And there are those elite coaches who have all those interpersonal skills, who know how to influence people and shape events. They understand players. They get inside their head. They're good listeners, they understand empathy, and they know what make people tick. Well, you know, you don't have to be too smart to realise who those players are, the successful coaches.
Yeah.
And so many people think that AFL coaching or coaching full stop is about product knowledge. It's the furthest thing that you need to know. Sure, everybody you involve has got good product knowledge. You wouldn't be there in the first place. But it's about managing people and knowing which buttons to press. And basically, as late Alan Jones would say, it's about having a bottle of vinegar in one hand and a bowl of honey in the other and knowing when to dispense it.
Yeah.
it's about people.
Did you watch Luke Beveridge last year and think that he was one that had got it right? And I mean, that before he even, you know, became a premiership coach?
Well, I tell you one thing about it. You know, I've been working very hard during the year and I don't get the footy as much as I like. And you're probably interested, Dwayne's a little bit, but that Luke Beveridge and the Bulldogs made me really fall back in love with Australian football. I just reckon their performances over September were amazing. And, you know, he's one bloke I'm talking about. You know, real tough love mentality, understands people, gets inside his players' heads, prepared his players, you know, the way the Bulldogs played, little died by your own actions, you know, just sensational. And I just reckon you wouldn't be far off the mark following the program of what, say, the Bulldogs did and how Luke Beveridge goes about it.
Yep. Dennis, always good to catch up. Thanks for your time. I know you're on holidays. I really do appreciate you taking our phone call.
Good on you, Kevin. All the best. See ya.
Dennis Pagan joining us there, former dual premiership coach at North Melbourne, their team of the century coach, of course. Man who knows all about pre-season training and knows what it takes to win at the highest level.